Philip Morgan.
Liston Witherill, how are you today?
Oh, I'm good, man. I'm good, but I'm spirited and I'm a little bit mad.
Sounds like you're mad as hell and you're not going to take it anymore. Do you want to like angrily promote anything?
No, I think I'll take it down a notch before I promote something. So I do want to promote something, and that is on July 9th, I am starting a training program, the first cohort, a beta version of my training program called Consulting Sales Bootcamp. There is a webinar that goes along with it if you're interested. I'll walk you through the whole thing, but here's kind of the back of the napkin notes for you. It's sales training for non-sellers. So if you're a consultant, if you're a business owner who sells consulting services, this is for you in particular. And by the time you get out of it, you're going to have a whole sales playbook, easy for me to say, that you'll be able to use in your business by the time you're done with the course. So just go to consultingsalesbootcamp.com to get all the details there.
You know, when I was working indirectly for Microsoft through an agency, one of the things they had me write was a sales playbook.
Uh-huh.
I had no clue what I was doing. What does a sales playbook look like? Maybe you can tell the folks at home just briefly what they're getting when they get a sales playbook.
Yeah, that's a great question. So it would be everything that goes into your sale. So the process that you use, what questions do you ask in your discovery? What do you need to know in order to qualify someone? What does a qualified client look like? What messages might you use during those calls? How do you present your information? How do you negotiate? What are you willing to trade off in the negotiation? And it's never just cut your price by a percentage. That's a spoiler alert for the course. So those kinds of things, like all of the things that you would encounter during the sale, through your progress in the course, you'll be building those out one small step at a time. And by the end of it, you're going to have your whole playbook.
Nice. Well, on July 11th, I might add, I'm starting a workshop.
Yeah.
The first workshop in specialization school. When I say the first, I just mean the first in a series of three. And this one's about really what people are telling me when I ask them to give me feedback. People who have been through this workshop already, they're saying things like, it cuts through analysis paralysis, gets me out of that analysis paralysis about how to specialize, gets me thinking clearly, gives me a short list of options. I'm delighted to hear that because that's exactly what the workshop's designed to do. So if you go to specializationschool.com, go to that first workshop, and from there you can see that the procedure to apply is to schedule a call with me. So it's super easy. You just have to schedule a 20-minute call. We'll talk about it. My main objective on that call is to apply maximum sales pressure. No, I'm kidding. It's just simply to make sure it's a good fit, make sure you're likely to get what you want to get out of the workshop. So specializationschool.com.
And I can vouch for this. I helped Philip create a sales playbook, and he was determined to keep it to one sentence, maximum sales pressure.
Buy it now or else. That was the one sentence I was going for.
Right.
So listen, what are you so fired up about today?
I'm fired up about something that I've experienced and that I totally understand, but I think the more time that passes, I'm having less and less sympathy for it. It's a plague. A lot of people are feeling it. So if you're in this camp, you're not alone. I've felt it. Philip has felt it. We've experienced it. We've made the excuses. It hurt. It burned like a third degree sunburn. It was awful. We didn't know how to get rid of it. And this is what it is. I'll stop teasing you. Wherever you are in your business today, there may be some substantial change that you want to make. I would even say maybe a tectonic shift. Maybe you want to go from billing hourly to fixed pricing or to a recurring revenue model, or you want to build up your positioning in your brand so that you're able to charge premium prices, or you want a different type of client so that you can charge more. Whatever it is, you probably are somewhere in your business now and you want to make some change that would put you somewhere else and probably a little bit more advanced in your business. Advanced in terms of payoff per unit of effort, let's say. But here's the problem. It's going to take a lot of time because essentially you're building two businesses. You're building the business you have now, and you also have to build the business that you want later. knowing that it doesn't have an immediate payoff. And when I talk to a lot of people, Philip, I ask them, for instance, if they want coaching from me, sales coaching, I'll ask, well, how much time do you have to dedicate to this? How much time are you prospecting? And they'll say sometimes, I'd say it's rare, but occasionally people say an hour a week at most. Mm-hmm. To which I always say, well, do you really want this?
I'm curious what they say there, but I'm curious for some more detail on what size businesses you hear this from. Is this more the solo operator, or do you hear this from small, mid-size agencies?
Well, it depends on what you mean by small, mid-size agency. I'd say I hear it from mostly people who are solo, independent consultants or owners of consulting companies, 10 or fewer people.
Okay. So people largely like us.
Yep.
We fit into that solo bucket.
And I think it's this difficulty of how do I go from status quo to something that is characteristically different than what I'm used to now?
Oh, totally. Hold up, though.
Uh-oh.
Do you really say, do you really want this? Do you really say it just like that? Do you soften it at all?
I do soften it. So
okay,
you're getting my radio persona here. Even though you're the one with the radio voice, I can have a radio persona.
Well, that's all I've got. I've got the radio voice. You have the actual radio persona.
Okay, I'll take that. No, I do soften it, but I will ask a question like, okay, cool. Well, so you've been putting all this time into your business and you are where you are, wherever that is. How do you expect to make a substantial change in your business if you're not allocating time, energy, and effort into it? How do you foresee that working?
Okay. So I'm still curious, what kind of responses do you get when you ask that question in the softer way that you actually ask it?
Well, I think some people just get flustered and kind of go like, oh, you don't understand.
Oh, right. Sure.
Which is absurd, obviously, because we're all figuring this out. And I think other people have a little bit of a sort of aha moment where they go, oh yeah, I never thought about it that way, right? Like, I can't just keep doing what I'm doing. Yeah. And other people are maybe a little bit resigned to the idea that like there's no way out, or they just can't figure it out. And then some other percentage are just feeling stuck. Okay, well, of the steps that I could be taking, which one should I take? And I think embedded in there is, how can I take the risk out of this so that I know whatever I do, it's going to work?
Right.
Which I have a lot to say about as well.
Okay, so you get a variety of responses. And I can sort of sympathize, I suppose, with all of those. But this question is the topic of our podcast. How in an hour or two could you possibly make a meaningful change? Would you say there's a sort of belief out there that you should be able to make your business better in an hour or two per week? And if so, where does that belief come from?
I don't know. I can't speak for anybody else. I think some people have in their mind, you know, I'm going to allocate X number of hours a week to my business. And then I can't, or I won't, or I don't want to do anything above and beyond that. I can't really speak for them, but I do think it is the I don't have time thing. I do think it is a limiting belief. Because it's like, what I would say to that is, well, no, you're just not making time for it. You could fire one of your clients that you've not liked for a long time and reallocate that time to building your business and forego some of that income, right?
Yeah. As I say these things, I realize that the position I'm in is different. Like, the life circumstances I'm in are different than others. So I don't have kids, for example. I don't have like a sick parent who's living with me and I'm caring for them. I don't have things that some people I know have going on in their life that are maybe bigger constraints than I have to deal with. But the list, and I don't think we're going to go all Gary Vaynerchuk on our listeners here.
Oh, I might, Philip. Oh, I might.
I feel a storm a-brewing. The point here is the list of things you could do differently that would change that perceived constraint is quite long. Like, could you get up an hour earlier every day and dedicate that hour to these activities we're talking about? Or I just think that it's a longer list. Yeah. Could you fire a client? Could you renegotiate with a client? Probably yes to all those, right?
Well, I mean, here's an easy one. You know, I was talking to someone today and he said, I want to raise my prices. I want to go from hourly to fixed billing. And I said, okay, this is one of my favorite questions. What's preventing you from blank, the thing that they want to do? Yeah. And I said, well, what's preventing you from just doubling your price the next time you talk to someone?
Yeah.
And he said, inexperience. And I think it was also like, well, I don't know, can I do that? I think there was almost like a permission element there.
Oh, right. Yeah. Am I allowed to?
Right. And of course, the answer is, yeah, of course, they may just laugh at you, right? Or obviously, they're not actually going to laugh at you, but they may just say, okay, that's way too high. I'm going to go elsewhere. Right. But if you didn't want to work for that original price anyways, who cares? That's what I say.
My reality starting out in working for myself was that I had this belief that opportunity was scarce.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that that was true. I don't think that was true. I think what was scarce is my knowledge about how to find opportunity and take advantage of it. But I did have that belief, and it certainly leads you very quickly, or did for me, led me very quickly to this place where I was like, essentially, pardon my French, but it was like, let me be your bitch because I don't want to lose this opportunity that to me feels scarce and rare. Not everybody has that experience. iOS developers, you know, 2012 did not have that experience.
Right.
Work was finding them. So not everybody is going to have that experience, but that can certainly lead you to being fearful about experimentation, right?
Well, the one thing I'll say is there is a common thread. People who aren't regularly having conversations with people who could refer them business or potential clients or just sort of interested parties who want to know more about what you're doing, even if they're maybe not a potential client. If you're not having a lot of those conversations, and by a lot, I mean several a week at least, mm-hmm. you're going to look at your business as facing extreme scarcity.
Right.
And so you're going to be a lot less willing to try stuff, right? You're going to be a lot less willing to go out and say, oh, this is my price. And with a straight face, if your previous highest price was $5,000, you should be able to say, oh yeah, it's $10,000 for that.
Here's the weird thing about what you just put your finger on, that sort of scarcity. And again, I'm drawing this directly from my own experience much earlier in my career as a self-employed person. So there's that scarcity of like, I don't know when another opportunity like this is going to come along again. So I better not screw this up, which you translate into, I better not take on too much risk or do an experiment that seems too risky. So there's that, but it's also combined with the following, which would seem to be contradictory, but they coexist. And the following is, business development is effortless because all my business comes through referrals and word of mouth and repeat business, which requires me to not do any separate activity to make it happen. It just happens as a byproduct of billing clients or people knowing that I'm a tech writer and I'm not terrible. You have this idea that you don't have to spend time to make it rain. It just rains when it wants to rain.
Right.
And you combine that with this fear that when it rains, you better, I'm stretching the analogy here, but you better have as many buckets out to catch it as possible because it may not rain for another 6 months.
Well, and I think related to that is if you're not having these conversations and you're not doing things to generate more of them, there is this moment of like, oh crap, how do I know how to do more of that? How do I know how to go out and create these conversations? And what if the conversations don't go well? And what if they don't pay off? And what if I don't get any work? And you're sort of in this trail of like, what if, what if, what if?
Yeah, it's a fearful place to be in when you think about experimentation, because it seems like high stakes to even try and a lot of uncertainty. You combine those two things and most people are naturally going to feel kind of paralyzed, right?
Right.
Anyway, it just strikes me as so interesting that the combination is business development is essentially free, doesn't cost me anything. Because essentially what you've done as a freelancer who doesn't do any business development is you've offloaded it to your network. You've outsourced business development to other people, hoping they'll refer you, hoping they'll think of you when they meet somebody who needs the thing you do. Well, that's, you're outsourcing that to them. but it feels like it's free to you to do so, no cost to you. And I'm saying that, I think, Liston, because I'm hoping that sets you up for the rant that I hope is coming my way in a minute here. So you're talking to people and they're like getting kind of nervous about the idea of spending more than an hour or two a week on what? Like sales stuff or?
Sales or marketing or let's talk about what it takes, right? Let's talk about what it takes in a second and then I'll go on my rant. But I do have a question for you. I talk to people, especially very, very technical people,
yeah,
pretty regularly, who say that they want to completely offload sales and marketing to someone else, an external person, to which I always say, well, at a minimum, you should know what they're doing and how it's done so that you can essentially act as the director or executive. And you're setting the strategy. And even if you're paying someone like Jake at Lead Cookie or Olivier or whoever to do your content marketing or your prospecting, you at least know what's done. What do you think about this idea? Because I always say the same thing, but I'm curious. What do you think about this idea of just outsourcing that completely?
I think it's really only suitable for a commodity service provider.
Mm.
It's about that simple, though, is I really only think it's suitable for someone that's in a kind of commodity thing. Now, you could outsource portions of it to certain specialists, like a lead generation specialist. You mentioned Jake at Lead Cookie, and that's a good example. And I think that works fine, but they're not really handling the entire process. And am I right when I heard you say outsource the entire process of sales and marketing?
Yeah. Like what if you're a business owner of, say, a development shop and you have 10 employees and you just want someone else to just bring all the sales in and you just want to manage projects?
I think that'll work if what you do is an interchangeable commodity. There's no reason you can't run a pretty decent services business selling interchangeable commodities. I know people who run, like a perfect example would be a dry cleaner or like a cleaning business, right? Can you think of anything that is closer? You probably can, but that's the best example I can come up with right now.
Sure, like pest control,
yeah, right.
Chimneys. Yeah, basically a lot of house stuff because homes have been around for so long.
Right. You might develop some sort of loyalty to one company because they sent out a plumber when your toilet was flooding and you just felt like, oh, they really saved the day. And so I'm always going to go with them. But I bet if the next time you needed a plumber and they weren't available for a week for some reason, you'd just go to the next company. It would be fine. So that's what I mean when I say commodity services. And you can make good money running that kind of business. If you want to have like a rent-a-cop business where you rent out security guards, you're just marking up other people's time, and that's a perfectly fine business. And in that case, I think you can totally outsource the sales because the product is sort of standardized. The salesperson or the marketing person doesn't really need to understand some kind of obscure, deep expertise that you've cultivated. They just need to move product, and the product looks fairly commoditized. So I think it can work there. But yeah, I'm going to borrow Blair End's terminology and say that if you have somewhat rare expertise, then your butt's got to be in the seat that's on the other end of the call so that you can have that power that comes from being the expert. And I don't think that's outsourceable at all. What do you think?
Not just the power, I'd say the demonstration of that expertise where people want, like when I get on the phone with people, and obviously I'm not saying I'm the world's expert. I really don't consider myself an expert at all, but they want to know, does this experience with Liston on this call feel like what I expected it to? And does he feel like someone who would give me great advice and great service through the process? And I think that's essential. The one thing I would challenge you on though, Philip, is even if you say, okay, we're going to make websites and we're going to focus on Squarespace or whatever you want to focus on, and that'll be our thing. And we do Squarespace sites and they're all $5,000, right?
Yeah, right.
Well, think about the number of decisions that have already been made in order to sell that product, right?
Uh-huh.
You've said Squarespace, $5,000. You need a process to sell that. You need to give that to someone else to go out and repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, to me, This is my standard answer when people say, I just like to outsource it all and just never think about it again. And then I say, well, what's your process now? Well, we don't have that. And I was like, okay, you hire a sales guy day one. What do you say to him or her?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know, right? So then I always say, well, question for you, why not just go get a job at a dev shop where all you have to do is manage projects? Like, why are you doing this on your own?
Yeah, right. I think the mindset that's more compatible with successful self-employment for the type of businesses that at least I'm trying to help people build, which are really expertise-driven businesses, is where you ultimately get to the point where what you can outsource more easily is the execution. And your job shifts away from day-to-day execution. And it shifts towards being the rainmaker and the lead generator and the salesperson. It's not that you couldn't scale that in some way with specific types of help, but I'm not a great example here because my business is a little different than what you're talking about, Liston. But when I get on a quote-unquote sales call, it's actually a consultation. There's not much selling that I need to do. I know we've touched on this before. The more quickly I can get into what feels like providing specific advice to that person that's based on specific information they've told me about their situation, the sale just kind of happens as a byproduct of that. So I know that's not a model anybody can adopt, but the whole idea of like completely outsourcing sales and marketing is kind of not laughable. I understand why people want to do it. They view it as unpleasant work that's beneath them, or they're just not good at it. So why not get an expert to do it? But it just doesn't seem all that viable.
Yeah, I think that because it's so close to the dollars that come in. Now, I tell everybody, stop selling, start serving. So I'm not being a proponent of go out and beat the pavement until you bludgeon people into submission and money falls out of their pocket. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is if you are doing something that isn't generating revenue, it's a hobby, it's not a business. And so revenue is a really important part of it. And if I were you, dear business owner and dear listener, I would want to know what is the best, most reliable way to do that on a regular basis. And therefore, you can't really outsource it until you start to figure that out.
Yeah.
I've been in a position before, Philip, where I showed up as the director of business development. And on day one, I said, okay, so what am I doing? They said, well, why don't you go to the server and read some of our brochures? I thought, well, what's that going to do? I mean, is there something better? So that was my training program. And the reason was they didn't have a repeatable way to do it. So I'd love to hear from you what you're actually dedicating to sales and marketing. I get asked this quite a bit, I think, because my marketing is so public.
Mm-hmm.
But I imagine that the amount of time that I put into LinkedIn is about 5 man-hours equivalent per weekday.
Okay.
That's just LinkedIn. Now, most of my marketing is generated for LinkedIn now, so there isn't a lot that's happening outside of it. Well, this podcast, the newsletter, I have a separate podcast that's launching. Okay, so yeah, there's a lot of other stuff. But LinkedIn is the bulk of it. And so my guess is it's something like 30 to 35 hours a week of marketing equivalent. Now, I don't do all of it myself. I have help. But for me, that's what it's taken for me to get where I am right now. And there are ways to be smart about it. And there are lots of reasons why I focus on LinkedIn, which we've discussed here. And you've jokingly said this will become the unofficial LinkedIn podcast. But it won't be, I promise, Philip. But it takes, in order to stand out of the crowd, in order to be noticed, in order to build a brand, in order to solidify a position, in order to disseminate your expertise, it takes a lot of freaking effort. It's not just going to happen.
Yeah. I think there are people who get lucky, and it does kind of violate all the norms you just described. But I think those are such a vanishing rare case of survivorship bias or something else. I understand this. There's a part of us that wants a fairy godmother to come along and make what you just talked about unnecessary for us. And that's not a reliable strategy. I think you're presenting a much more reliable approach, which is you can count on a lot of upfront work in order to change the status quo. Let me expand on that a little bit. Literally, earlier today, I recorded a Consulting Pipeline podcast solo episode about, it was sort of an analogy. With software, there's switching cost. Even if the software vendor is not trying to lock you into their platform, just moving from one to the other has a switching cost. If you wanted to induce a panic attack in someone, find someone who uses email marketing a lot. I'm not even talking about Ramit Sethi or somebody on that scale. I'm just talking about someone, even me. Okay, if you wanted to induce a panic attack in me, we're talking and you just casually mention, hey, why don't you migrate away from Drip? That's the email marketing platform I use, to something else. You'll see the color drain from my face. If I had a Xanax on me, I would start reaching for it.
Okay.
It would induce a panic attack to even think about that because it's so burdensome. That's switching cost. And implementing new ideas or new ways of doing things in your business also has a switching cost. So that's a way to look at what you're talking about, Liston, is you want to move to value-based pricing. That's awesome. There's going to be a cost to you. It's not free because you have to do things differently. You have to learn how to do things differently. You have to experiment, try and fail. That's all part of the switching cost of changing how you do things. And changing from, well, I don't market, work just shows up when it shows up. And I love that it's free, but I hate that it's unreliable. Moving from that to, yeah, I've got 6 months of work booked out and I've got a pipeline that I think is going to keep me fed for a year. That's awesome. We all want that second thing, but there's a switching cost to getting there. It's like changing from one major piece of software to another.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that involved. And it's just like, I think we've talked about the business of the future for you is characteristically different than the business you're running today. By definition, that's why you want it. Mm-hmm. You're unhappy with some things. And so there's going to be some bumps along the road in that transition. And it's not going to happen on accident. It's going to take a lot of intention and effort. Just think about, if you're listening to this, how long it's taken for you to be in your current position. You have clients, you don't want to lose them. It's probably taken you years to get to the point you're in now. And so the idea that you're going to build up a brand new business in a few hours a week in 6 months strikes me as absolutely absurd.
Why do you call it a brand new business? I have a sense of why you might, but I'm wondering if the folks at home are clear on that. Just to be clear, you're not talking about, well, I'm a software developer now, I want to become an attorney. That would be a very different business.
Oh, sure.
You're not talking about that, but you talk about it as a brand new business. Why?
I can use myself as an example. I was selling digital marketing services to clients. And then I said, I don't want to do that. I want to focus on selling. And I think there's this huge market of consultants out there who need help. They have the opportunity to help lots of people because they're awesome at what they do, but they don't really know how to sell their services effectively, and I can help them do that.
Right.
Totally different customer type, totally different way of selling that, totally different packaging. I have to create new content. I have to create a name for myself, whereas before I was known as marketing copy CRO messaging guy, now I'm going to be known as sales guy. Like, so basically every aspect of the business is different. Now, I got to keep the network that I created. And so people like you, Philip, have been helpful in helping me build this business and gain awareness. And other friends of ours have been helpful, Kai and Jonathan.
So would you use the same sort of concept of you're building a new business, even if someone's not changing their core service offering, but they're trying to learn how to sell more proactively or figure out lead generation? Would you still say that in those cases?
I wouldn't go to that extent. So let's say you're a generalist marketing firm and you're billing hourly for client projects. If you wanted instead to go to fixed pricing for websites and monthly retainer for managed service on the website and social media, right?
Yeah.
You don't need a new website, but you need to change the copy on your website. You need to make it more specific. You need a new way of selling your services because you're no longer calculating how many hours. You're now having to go out and give a fixed price, which means there's more risk in working with people you don't know and understand.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that as in like you have a previous relationship with them, meaning they fit a client type for you. So you can reliably predict what their range of problems and challenges might be. So that's what I mean is maybe your transition won't be as dramatic as mine, but the idea that something is really, really worth it and you're only willing to put an hour in a week, it really irks me, man. Because what I would say to you is, I think you don't really know yourself. You think you want that, but you don't really want that. Because you probably spend more than an hour a week doing lots of things in your life.
Yeah, right. It's shocking when you install a piece of software like Rescue Time on your computer and start getting feedback about where you actually do spend time.
Yeah, this is why I don't have Rescue Time installed.
Ah. What does it look like for someone to really want it? Because surely you've seen that as well.
Well, I think it all starts with acknowledging that this is going to be work and acknowledging that it's going to take time and repeated, consistent, long-term effort. I think that's where it starts.
Yeah.
And then the next step, of course, is to think about like exactly what this would look like. So for me, I think you're pressuring me to put an amount of hours on this. Are you?
Actually, no. Me pressure you? No. What are you talking about?
I can't imagine.
Now, really more what I was fishing for is a story or a narrative or like, oh, I worked with this person one time and they clearly wanted it. And here's what they did that gave me evidence that they wanted it. I mean, answer it however you want, but that's actually what I was fishing for.
I think the biggest indicator is mental bandwidth. Like, are you getting past the point of saying, this is going to be a lot of freaking work. Okay, what are some things I can start with? How can I take stock? What kind of help or resources do I need to engage with if I can't do it on my own? What am I willing to give up in order to do this new thing? Now, maybe that's some client work or you may forego some income. Maybe it's time with friends or watching TV or whatever thing you do for fun, but there's got to be a sacrifice in there because you can't. Let's put it this way. It's so painfully simple. If you just keep doing what you're doing right now, it's impossible for you to make a change. It's not going to happen. So what are you willing to change and give up in order to get to this place, or at least give yourself a chance to get to the place where you want to go?
Yeah, that so resonates with what I remember from, I don't know, whatever, 5-6 years ago, starting out 2009. I mean, when I started out in 2009, I felt quite optimistic. And then, you know, went downhill from there before I rebooted and really changed some things about how I was doing things. But when at the sort of low point, when I felt stuck or trapped, there was that belief. And it was this really big ironclad kind of belief. Like it felt like it would be difficult to change this belief. Looking back on it, now I know that it wasn't reality. It was just a belief. It was a story I was telling myself about how things are. And the belief was, I'm pinned down. I don't have the resources I need to make things better. I'm working all the hours I have to maintain the status quo. Where do I get the resources I need, either time or energy or mental focus, to make things better? And looking back, I can say, well, things weren't actually that bad. I wasn't that pinned down. I just needed some outside inspiration or motivation to see things differently was like the first thing that I needed. I hope that's encouraging to people that things, you're probably not as constrained as you think you are.
Well, I agree with that. I think what you're sensing in me and why I agreed to share this rant with all of you is that I want you all to do whatever it is that you want to do. But I think part of taking the steps that it would take to actually achieve that is to acknowledge that there's going to be work involved and that may be uncomfortable. So it's a matter of showing up over and over again, sometimes devoid of positive feedback. You're going to have to keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it. I mean, so we were, prior to starting this recording, we're talking about the fact that I had my first viral video on LinkedIn. By the time of this publish, it's going to have over 100,000 views.
And the folks at home can't see this, but there's a glow emanating from Liston's head.
It's so full of shit. That's not even true.
It's like those oil paintings of Jesus Christ that you've seen where there's a sort of halo around his head. That's actually what's happening with Liston right now. It's amazing.
You know, it's only the backlighting that's attached to the ceiling. It's not.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay.
It's not anything else. But yeah, so viral video, first of all, it's created all kinds of problems for me in responding to those people. And it's like back on the saddle. Tuesday, I published my Tuesday video. Today, I published my Wednesday video. Did those go viral? Absolutely not. Right?
Yep.
None of those people care about my new videos. But the point is, I said, well, this is a strategy that I'm going to pursue because it's the way that I'm going to build my brand, build a defensible position for my business. So I'm going to keep doing it. And there's no promise of a return on any individual thing that I'm doing, but I believe if I stick to it, this is all going to work and pay off. And that's kind of the hard work that it takes.
Yeah. Maybe I feel this more than other people do, but I think our culture trains us to expect some kind of outside savior to, this is not going in a religious direction. It's just, we want some definitive moment that makes everything better. Because that's how television shows are edited. That's how things are often portrayed in the media, because it makes for a great story, right? And it's not a reliable approach to changing your business. One of the things I maybe over-rely on as an analogy is lean iterative development in software. It's because I primarily work with software developers, so I feel like the analogy is going to resonate. But it's just these on their own, insignificant iterations that just, they build up and they sort of develop a critical mass. I don't think it's like an atomic bomb where the critical mass results in an explosion. I guess that happens sometimes, but I believe that the model is, there's no overnight success. There's just, Amy Hoy calls it stacking the bricks. How do you build a big, impressive wall? One fucking brick at a time.
Yes, I love that analogy. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and it might be more than that. You're actually making the bricks. You're not buying them from a brick store. You're just making them. And that makes it seem even longer and even the time horizon for quote-unquote success even further away. But I just don't know any other way other than commitment to literally daily effort. And I'm not like secretly advocating daily emailing, but that's an example of me trying to pursue that philosophy about how you make things better in your business is sending an email every day to my list.
I pinged people in my network and asked them, what do you think is more important, quality versus quantity? This age-old kind of question. Yeah. And it was interesting. It seemed like it was mostly split. Some people said quality is everything, and other people said, no, you got to show up a lot, and quality doesn't matter. And I take a more nuanced approach than both of those. However, I think after doing this now for 5 months, I've now published a daily blog post every day since November 7th, I believe, of last year. So it's been over 200 days in a row.
Kudos.
I publish 3 videos a week now. I publish my newsletter weekly. We publish this podcast. And like, I feel like the flywheel is just starting to move.
Yeah.
And so it takes a lot. And my big takeaway in all of this is whether you do it daily or weekly or whatever it is that you're doing, if you do want to make a change and you want to build something long-term, it's not quality, it's not quantity, it's really consistency, I believe.
Yeah.
It's showing up over and over and over and over and over again until you're undeniable.
Well, and I think that I have a not entirely different take on that. I agree. Quality, quantity, consistency. If we look at those three things, consistency is the most important thing you could be doing. And if that means you have to sacrifice quality at first, to me, you would take that deal anytime. If you could, I've been watching Westworld. And so, you know, they have these,
oh my God, so good,
artificial intelligent beings, and they can sort of tweak their personality parameters. So if you imagine yourself being able to get an upgrade in one of those three things, I would take the upgrade on consistency every single time, because what will happen is you'll earn the upgrade on quality. That will happen as a byproduct of the consistent effort. And then the consistency, of course, creates quantity, unless your consistency is, I mean, over time, it creates quantity. So to me, it's like the superpower is the consistency.
Yeah, agreed. And I mean, I think I was at this event on Monday night, LinkedIn Local here in Portland, and there was a videographer there who was kind enough to donate his services. And we were going around the room sort of sharing LinkedIn tips. God, more LinkedIn.
I just can't get away. The LinkedIn juggernaut.
People were asking me for tips on video. What equipment do you use? What microphone do you use? What kind of lighting? And I said, screw all that. You have a phone that's a pretty good camera and has a decent mic. Stand in front, be lit by the sun, and shoot your video on your camera. Please don't buy any other equipment. Now, of course, the videographer hated this advice, right? But my point to them was, if you want to try video, the only thing stopping you from doing it is recording and publishing video. It's not equipment. That is not your barrier, right? All of that other stuff is an excuse, just very similar to, I only have an hour a week to do this. Oh, I need the right video camera. I need the right audio equipment. Otherwise, I couldn't possibly publish video. Well, to that I say, maybe you don't actually want what you think you want. Maybe you just like talking about it.
I think that's a good place to leave it. I feel like anything I would add there would dilute the punch of that.
I agree. And I want to just cap all that off by saying, no matter what you're doing or where you are right now, Liston still loves you, even through the tough love.
I feel it. And there's still that glow there. It hasn't diminished.
All right, Philip, we better end it, man. Have a good one.
You too. Bye.